Yo, yo, welcome back to the truth. This is your boy E, and this is another episode of the Real Offspring of Failure show. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yeah, I almost forgot the name of my own goddamn show for a second. But check it out. This episode, I'm having a conversation with a friend of mine named Shelly, and we're just discussing relationships and marriage and different dynamics within your relationships and, you know, how people love and how we see relationships and how we view our partners and, you know, our roles within relationships. So we're just having a conversation, just riffing, but the conversation we're having and some of the bombs, knowledge bombs that dropped in this conversation is just, you know, amazing. So I really think you guys will enjoy it. Full disclosure, there's a couple of little technical audio issues that I didn't vet out, you know, like I usually do, because I was so geeked on having this conversation with her because she's a very smart, very intelligent woman. So I just wanted to get going and we hit the ground running. So I didn't really go back. I didn't want to start over. I didn't want to, you know, stop her flow. So we're going to have a couple of little issues, but, you know, it's not too bad. So just bear with me. But I hope you guys enjoy the show. Like I said, we started off talking about our individualities within relationships and things of that nature. So we just hit it and got it going. So enjoy the show. I appreciate you guys for being here. Love you. Thanks a lot.
Individuals start dating. They like each other for who they are as individuals, and they decide they want to spend their life with that individual, sharing their life with that individual. But then for some reason, once commitment comes into play, it turns from sharing your life for that with that individual to living your life solely for that individual, just steeped in codependence and losing sight of the individuals to become the codependent we. And when that happens, then many times we find that people then become discontented in their situation. They become resentful, and it usually ends up in divorce because they lost sight of who they were as individuals. You know, when you don't have children and careers and stuff to throw yourself into anymore, at like that 20-year mark when the kids are gone and it's an empty nest situation and careers have been established and people are riding easy, then they've lost sight of, okay, now who am I? Now what do I enjoy? What do I like? And then when the other person doesn't partake in those same things anymore, those same hobbies and interests, they grow apart. And it's a vicious cycle, I feel, for a lot of people. And I have fallen into that trap myself, and we had to work hard to try and reestablish ourselves as individuals with our own lives, sharing our life together.
Exactly. Now let me go into, for people who are going to be listening, what we're talking about is I left a post on the group that we're in, and the post basically read, I don't have it in front of me to read it verbatim, but the post basically read that honesty and openness in a relationship, sexual honesty and openness in a relationship is the absolutely beautiful thing, or something like that. I have it read, but something to that nature, that it was, you know, it's a beautiful thing to have, to be open and honest within your relationship, sexually or however. So that's what we're speaking to today. That's the kind of that's the conversation we're having today, because just like you just said, and what really caught me, point you were making about when you meet someone and you like them for who they are, and, you know, like I said, things go left when people, you know, when you blend your wants and your needs with their wants and needs, now you're trying to make it a we thing. But like you said, did you really enjoy me? Did you really want me? Or you just wanted the idea of me? And I think that's a problem, or a situation that people put themselves in all relationships, especially in romantic relationships, because instead of you accepting that person exactly who they are, you try to turn them into something that you that fits you and what you want them to be, like they're an accessory to your wants and needs. And that's not how a relationship, in my mind, that's not how a relationship should function. And that's why I liked your comment, you know, the comment that you made on that post, because you were basically breaking it down in, you know, a lot more articulate and beautifully than I could ever say. The way you broke it down, I just, you know, I was just blown away by it.
Well, I happened to live, we started out doing the whole monogamous thing. Growing up, I was not a monogamous individual, but in the Bible Belt, I was just deemed a slut and a whore and loose and had sexual issues. And I felt that way for a really long time. And my second marriage, you know, my first marriage fell apart. He found somebody else. I tried to make it work. He didn't want it to work. I'm glad it didn't work. Moved on, found my second husband, tried to live that whole monogamous life set, and it just wasn't who we were. And then you bring in technology and cell phones, and people are at your fingertips and texting people, and there was all kinds of other distractions. And again, we still were trying to live that monogamous life, living strictly for each other, raising children, and we found that it became very monotonous, very boring. There was nothing to talk about. We were always together. There were, you know, once the kids were gone and we were empty nesters, it really exposed how old and boring we had gotten. And we found that a lot of things that I wanted to go back to exploring from when I was young, he wasn't interested, and vice versa. And it got to be one of those things where, well, you know, an example is motorcycle riding. I don't want to drive a motorcycle, but I love to ride on the back of a motorcycle. But a lot of people will not just give anyone a ride on the back of their motorcycle. It's also a very kind of intimate situation, because you're pressed up against each other, you're sitting in between each other's thighs, you know, a girl is pressed against a dude, and it can become kind of an intimate situation. And so a lot of gentlemen are not okay with that, even if the gentleman says, hey, you know, take her for a ride, she loves it. But just because my husband doesn't want to ride, has no interest in it, why should I never get to experience that again for the rest of my life?
Exactly.
And there are a lot of things in life that we forsake enjoying just because the other person doesn't. The whole trying to be someone's everything gets to be exhausting. It's a lot of pressure. It's the word has escaped me. It's just a lot of pressure to be someone else's everything, and expecting someone else to be your everything. I don't understand the whole concept of finding all of your joy strictly with one person. You're allowed to have a multitude of relationships in life, and love comes in so many different forms, and love and sex are not synonymous. It's great when they do to go together, but sex doesn't depend on love, and love doesn't depend on sex in order to coexist. And so many people seem to have that confused. You can't have friends of the opposite sex if that's who you're interested in sexually, because, oh my gosh, something might happen. You don't know what your own personal limits and boundaries are. You can't control yourself.
Exactly.
You know, why can you not have more than one open, loving relationship with more than one person? Because if I'm not here with my husband, it doesn't matter if I'm bowling, if I'm painting ceramics, if my girlfriend and I are off buying lingerie, being silly, or if I'm with someone else at dinner or at a movie or hanging out on their couch or whatever. What we do when we're not together shouldn't have such a drastic bearing on life, like so many people make it. Because again, you're not together. You're doing other hobbies, you're doing other things, and you're finding joy with other people in other areas that your partner may not be interested in. That same thing goes sexually. There are going to be things that I like and that I'm interested in that he's not, and vice versa. So why should we never be allowed to enjoy those things again. Why can I not help fulfill those things for him that I'm not interested in, and vice versa, by allowing him to seek them elsewhere? It doesn't nullify how much he loves me, or our time together, or the things that we do together. It just allows him to be able to explore other parts of his needs, wants, desires, and fantasies, so that he can go to his grave being a happy and fulfilled human being without regrets and wishes and wants. I don't want him to go to his deathbed wishing that he had picked somebody else that he could have enjoyed something else with that he never got to experience. Why can I not fulfill that by, okay, cool, I can be in control of my feelings and emotions and realize that that's not for me, but that doesn't mean that you're never allowed to experience that.
Exactly. Now, what do you say? That's beautifully said. Because it's exactly, I can't even retort to it, because that's exactly how I feel. Everything you just said is exactly how I feel. So there's nothing even for me to rebut with that. But let me ask you this. What would you say to someone who would ask you, they would listen to what you just said, and they would ask you, well, why even be married if you think, or if you want to experience all these things, all these different things with people which you have a right to, or whatever, then why even be married? Why even get into that kind of situation, or that the institution of marriage is about you and one other person? Why even explore that if you want to be, you know, out there and do what you want to do, as they would say, you know, you do what you want to do. Why even be married? What would you say to somebody asking you that question?
Okay, so when I'm confronted with that kind of mindset, I remind people that government institution of sanctioned marriage is just that, a government institution of sanctioned marriage. So that when people squabble and they have to separate their property, they can do so legally with a judge. But commitment is not a government sanctioned situation. You can commit to somebody without the government being involved, whether that's a business commitment. Now, hopefully you have a contractual agreement so that everybody gets their needs and wants and, you know, their expectations met. Uh-huh. I think marriage used to be a contractual agreement. Matter of factly, 100 years ago, prearranged marriages, it was a way for the head male of any family structure to gain leverage in an economic movement through the caste system. They would sell off their daughters and hope to gain assets that would make them be a little higher within the caste system. It was not about love. It was not about relationships. It was about breeding, to carry on the male lineage, have someone to inherit his things when he passes. And the woman's role was to provide the womb for that next male generation to come into play. It was a patriarchal situation. It had nothing to do with the needs, wants, and desires of a woman. Our plight in life was to be pretty, to look good under a male or in between his thighs, and to bear him. Once in a while, you know, you'd pop out a girl or two, but the majority were supposed to be males. So it was always a contractual agreement, not necessarily based on love. In today's society, it's based on love. In religious societies, it can be based on monogamy, but marriage itself is not rooted in monogamy. Monogamy is a framework structure, just like ethical non-monogamy is a framework structure. Both are valid. The majority of people here in the Western world, we are force-fed and brainwashed by societal notions from the pulpit that, you know, still push monogamy. It was a means of controlling and subjugating women and minorities into breeding chattel for all intents and purposes. That's what marriage was. So depending on which religious sects and background you dive into, lots of them have always had contractual agreements, a written contract. This is what is happening and taking place, and everyone that's involved in this gets this out of it, and that's how it went about. And that could be anything from how you were going to treat each other, how many children were expected, the kinds of property that would change hands, if, you know, prenuptial agreements would have been involved in that, if this happens, it forsakes this right, blah, blah, blah. There were all different kinds of stipulations involved in those contractual agreements for marriage. Today, society has that whole cornbread force-fed notion from Christian religion, and you know, thinks that everybody has a cookie cutter relationship, and they don't. You and yours deem as appropriate is going to vary from your neighbor, from your parents, from your grandparents, and from your coworkers, and from the rest of the people sitting in your church community. Everyone has different relationships. But for some reason, it all revolves around sex. Monogamous individuals always boil it down to sex. You can have relationships with everyone else, but you can't have sex with more than one person. Why the hell not? Why is that just limited to single people? Why are only single people allowed to experiment? How in the world do you ever get to threesomes and foursomes and menage a trois of orgies and stuff if you can only have sex with one person at a time? If people are consenting adults, and they know what they're getting into, and they've established their boundaries, their hard limits, their hard no's, what the expectations are for a given situation and scene, why are they deemed less than morally for going into it openly and consensually and communicating with the others that are involved with what it is that they need, seek, and desire from that situation?
I couldn't have said it better. Look, to me, everything you said, to it's like you're preaching to the choir. You heard my episode, and it's exactly how I feel. But I don't understand why what you just said, as beautiful as it was, and you know how you broke it down, is very simple thinking to me. In my eyes, it's, you know, people should be able to do whatever it is they want to do, like you said, ethically, as long as we have consent on each side, as long as you're not hurting yourself or someone else, you should be able to do whatever it is that makes you happy. This, like you said, this cookie cutter way of, you know, relationships should be this way. It should be a man and woman, you know, 2.5 kids, the house, the dog, and all this. You know, that doesn't work for everybody. And anytime anybody steps outside this perceived normalcy of what a relationship should be, especially in this country, you know, in our society, it's deemed abnormal or taboo. And I don't, you know, I don't adhere to that at all. I mean, I don't even believe in the whole thing of what's normal, what's not normal. People always say, well, you think outside the box. You know, you're outside the box thinking. I don't think there is a box. There's no box that we should be put in anyway. If I feel a certain way, now with me, you know, full disclosure, I've been married going on 23 years, okay? Been with my wife since I was 15 years old, you know? So just hearing that stat, you would say, well, he's completely for monogamy and things like that. No. I mean, I've learned, and me and my wife, we got together so young that we evolved as we got older. Yeah, we had our problems and we had our situations and things of that nature, and we worked through them, you know, worked through them, went through the fire, came back, you know, it's been up and down. It's been 23 years, and I'm 44 years old, you know, I'm still learning. I'm still, you know, trying to figure out what it is, who it is I am and what it is I want, you know. And I think I'm pretty secure in who I am, what I want, and she's on the same path, trying to figure out what it is she wants, what it is she needs, and know who she is. So we learn as we go.
But, and those three needs and wants are not the same as the needs and wants were when you guys were 15 and 20 and 30, and it changes over time. We're not stagnant individuals. So why would we not want new experiences that we never even thought about back in the day?
Exactly. And you have to be open to, you know, even things that make you, you know, like, it's like you would want, you may want something completely different than what your partner wants. But I should be open to even, you know, because some people are not even open to having a conversation about anything that they deem abnormal or whatever. It might be something that you may want. You know, me and you, we're together, we've been together for years or whatever. And you may develop, but not even say develop, but you may figure out, or, you know, finally feel comfortable enough to let me know, hey, this is something that I like. I like this or whatever. I'm not going to, you know, pigeonhole for one thing, but it may be something that you like that you didn't think that I would approve of. At least, even if I'm saying, well, I'm not really into that. But the problem in most relationships is that nobody even wants to even have the conversation. It's almost like, how dare you even want anything other than what I want? And I think that's, like you said, that's why you find people in so many divorces, because, and people cheat and do things like that, because they don't even feel comfortable in being themselves or even expressing what it is that I want. I can't even say it. I can't even, you know, have a conversation with you, let alone even get it. I can't even talk about it, you know, and nobody wants to be suppressed as an adult, you know, as a, you know, and like I said, being open and honest, you know, you can try that, but if you're not being received, what, you know, why am I here? Why am I even here? You know, it makes no sense to me.
Hey there, I'm Chardonnay, and if you are in dire need of getting your hair did and you're in the Houston, Texas area, come on down to Crown by Nay. I specialize in natural and extension services. Natural relax, weave, wig installations, pixie cuts, anything that you need. So come on down to Crown by Nay, that's CrownedByNae on Instagram. Check me out.
And I think that leads back to how we initially met with, you know, the beauty of a relationship is being able to have that deep, open, honest communication. They don't have to be into it. They don't have to like it, but they have to create that space for you to open up as to who you are as an individual and what you need and what you want. And if you can't even open up to your partner about the things that you need and want, how do they actually know who you are? Again, I think a lot of people wander around loving the ideologic notion of being married and sharing your life with someone else, but they don't actually know who that person is. You hear so many people say, I was with that person for 10 to 15 years and I didn't know who they were. And that goes that back down to, they were never willing to stand naked in front of you with all of their faults exposed, all of the good points and the bad points, their fantasies, their kinks, their interests, what turns them on, what they like to do for hobbies, the things that makes all their bells and whistles and alarms go off and tingle and vibrate. And they never expose themselves in that way to truly be accepted for who they are. They're accepted for what society dictates is prim and proper. And then you have so many people that just literally don't know each other.
Yeah, they don't even take the time to even express, because they're looking at, they're not even, when you're in a relationship, the two eyes that you need to be focused on is the person sitting across from you, that person that you're married to, or you're in a relationship with, or whatever you want to call it, however you want to label it. That's the two eyes you need to be worried about looking at you. And not that those two eyes dictate everything that you are, but that's the person that you should be, you know, you should be concerned with, how that person looking at me. And then we can have a, you know, we can come to understanding. But for the most part, in most relationships, people are worried about all these other eyes. They're worried about how everybody else perceives them. How, you know, even from their kids to their parents to their siblings to their friends, co-workers, you know, like I said, if you're a religious person, the church members or whatever the case may be, you're worried about how everybody else looks at you, but the only person that you're, you know, that person that you should be, you know, committed to, or even putting in the notion that, you know, if I'm going to look some way, like you said, stand in front of some person, that proverbial nakedness and being me, look at my fault, take me for who I am. It's only one person, or depending on how your situation is, you know, is put together. There's only should be a certain amount of eyes that you should be worried, and you're worried about things that don't concern you. Because once you don't, you know, once you feel like I'm not satisfying these masses of people that you think you gotta, you know, you gotta satisfy, or you gotta look a certain way to, that person that was looking at you was like, okay, well, I'm out. I'm not. You're not even concerned about me. You're worried about everybody else. So let me go find somebody who actually cares about what I think. And I think that's a lot of problems too. I mean, people can say, you know, hey, I'm being me, this is me. No, because if you're worried about everybody else, I can't worry about who's not. If you're in the bed with me or who I wake up with, that's the only person I should be concerned about. I'm not concerned. I mean, yeah, I want to look a certain way. I want to be a certain way. I want to be a decent person, and people perceive me or see me as a decent person. But outside of that, I'm not worried about how anybody else looks at me. I'm worried about what my wife thinks or any other situation that you may be in. I'm worried about that, not all these other, you know, judgments and, you know, and the ideas of all these other people. And that's where a lot of people go wrong. And that's why a lot of these relationships don't work, especially with, like you said earlier, with the advent of, you know, the internet and cell phones and texting. People are right there, you know. All these people that you never knew were there, all these people that think like without the internet, me and you would never have had this conversation. We would have never met, you know. I'd have never, you know, got a chance to see anybody or speak to anybody who may think or who may have an idea like I do. You know, I might think I'm the only person, you know, I might, you know, the world is so small. Now the world has opened up to everybody. Now you can talk to people who may have, you know, similar ideas to you. Not that we all think alike, but, you know, who have similar ideas and similar outlooks on things, and it makes you feel more comfortable with being you. And that's the good thing about the internet. With all the bad things, that is one good thing about having the internet and Facebook and Instagram and all those other things, you know. So I appreciate your outlook, because it's hard to even have a conversation with people, and they might feel, yeah, they may feel a certain way, but it's hard for them to even, you know, express it, because they're worried about, you know, what does someone so think. I had a friend actually like that. We would talk, have these, you know, very open, intimate conversations, but when it came to someone else, they would clam up. You know, I can't, you know, my parents may look at it this way, kids may look at it this way. And I'm like, how can you live that way? How is that even, I don't even think that's even healthy to live like that. What do you say to something like that, when you have a person that you know is, you know, I guess with lack of better phrase, and putting on a front or being fraudulent to the world, when they know they see things or can be something else, but they rather, you know, suppress their own feelings to please the masses or please family members, the kids or parents or whatever. What do you say to something like that? To some part, somebody like that?
Virginity does not equate virtuosity. And that is something that we have really got to get out of societal stigma. How many people you slept with and the things that you've done and experienced really don't have a whole lot of bearing on your moral character, aside of, you know, make it, as long as everyone is an adult and consenting and agreeing to what's going on, and it's monitored and people's health is not in jeopardy, then there should be no moral stigma with virginity equating virtuosity. Exactly. And I think even though that is a pressure that is put on women from the time we are old enough to understand the difference between males and females, and piety, like, people don't I don't understand the whole pious situation of, well, you know, my wife doesn't really care for sex. She's an ace individual. I love her. Therefore, my needs have to sit on the back burner. Why? Why?
Yeah.
If she doesn't want to do those things with you, why are you just not allowed to have those experiences in your life? Why can't she afford you to have those experiences with someone else? Why are we so concerned with who people have sex with and how people have sex?
Yep.
It's a preoccupation with monogamy. There are so many other things that bring people together and couple people together for whatever reason. You've had LGBTQ people that have lived on the down low for centuries because it's not a new phenomenon within the human race or other animals either. It's just what is societally acceptable. And for so long, Christianity ran the Western world over here, and they dictated what was and what was not allowed. And if you stepped outside those boundaries, it cost you your life. Women like to be submissive and be quiet and be in a man's world were cast out as witches and burned at the stake because they revolted and they weren't going to continue living their life under the thumb of male regulation. People come together for a variety of reasons. You had LGBTQ that lived on the down low, and they would marry their best friend so that they could pass, so that they could conform to what society dictates. Maybe once in a while, pop out a child here and there, but then get to go and live their life. People couple up for economic reasons. I mean, it's a common joke within ethical non-monogamy. You need more than two grown adults to help pay the bills these days.
Exactly.
You know, people couple up for so many reasons, and not everyone is on the same level sexually because those kinds of things don't get talked about in the beginning. Because, you know, we just don't talk about those things. That's not decent conversation to be having. My parents were very mismatched on that. My father had a libido that was through the roof, and my mother was on the ace spectrum, very pious and prudish, and you know, you didn't even have sex when you went to your parents' house on Christmas vacation because you were in their bed, and how dare you? Now you've got four kids running around that proves that happens, but you're not allowed to do that because that's just rude and that's not how people are supposed to behave. And then my father was the type that, oh, we're stopped at the gas station or we're just down the street from the gas station. Can I get a little bit? You know, nobody's watching. It was two very polar opposite extremes that led to confusion in my upbringing. Absolute confusion. Because they just were not compatible on a sexual level. But that didn't mean they didn't love each other. It didn't mean that they weren't compatible in a lot of other areas. And that they, you know, they made a great team. Again, marriage is about living your life and walking through life's trials and tribulations and being each other's cheerleaders and support system, picking each other up when you fall down and get hurt and, you know, helping each other through sickness and health. It's not strictly putting blinders on like a horse and living life solely for that person. And if they're not there, then, you know, what are you supposed to do? When you're still an individual and you still have to survive and you have to get through this day to the next day until that individual is back in your life.
Let me ask you this question. Now, I'm pretty sure this is correct, but your husband is Black, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's okay. Creole.
Okay. And I always wondered, do you think, even with your openness and how you are, do you think, I know from in my community, from, you know, being a Black man in America and being, you know, that I know how most, I'm gonna say all, but most Black people, from what I know, how we look at religion and how important religion is in our life. Now, I'm a non-religious person, you know, proud non-religious. But, you know, I know how it is in my community. And I know that the stigma of doing anything that's basically outside of monogamy is always frowned upon, especially in religion, especially in Christianity, you know, for the most part, especially in this country. Do you think that race plays any part in the way you're able to be as open as you are? Because I know, like I said, you have a Black husband, and I know you guys probably had different conversations, and the backgrounds are different and communities are different. Do you think that race plays any part in people who are able to be as open as they want to be, especially with you? Do you think that plays a part in it, with being able to think the way you want, or to even, you know, explore how you feel about certain things?
I do have to say that where I am currently, it is predominantly more white, Caucasian or brown skin, light brown skin individuals than African American individuals. Okay. And is it because of race, or is it just because of the population itself? I think it's a matter of semantics altogether. I don't know that race really has a lot to do with it. I think it's semantics. We have so many people who are out here being serial monogamists, jumping from one bed to the next. And, you know, Becky's had a couple of boyfriends this year, while Sharika has had a dozen. You know, and we know Sharika's loose. We're not so sure about Becky. Becky may be a good white girl, but we know Sharika because she had a kid, and we know she likes it, and so we're gonna assume that all the 12 individuals Sharika's been with have gotten their entitled access and views. But Becky, we're not really sure about. Is it race? I'm not certain. I think a lot more people are better at pulling off their serial monogamy as an excuse to do what they want to do. I'll be with this person for a couple months, and when that fizzles and fades, I'll be with this person for a couple of months, and then that'll fizzle and fade, and right to the next bed. We've had this situation in his family just recently. They were bad-mouthing me. I've always been the white devil of sorts, because he was a good Christian, good Southern Black Baptist boy, raised in Southern Black Baptist upbringing with preachers in the family. But it's okay that my great uncles were Rolling Stones, and sometimes, you know, even my father-in-law, they had hers, his, theirs, and then his oopses, you know.
Exactly.
Down the street, he was tapping Miss So-and-so down the street, and that's not just your best friend, that's actually your brother, and you don't know it. A lot of serial monogamy that went on. It's really hard to tell at this point in time. We haven't been far enough away from women having equal rights to know how the situation really lays out, because, you know, our grandmothers, my grandmother, we're the same age. My grandmothers and great grandmothers, while they got to marry for love, they still didn't have rights. I remember when I had my child in 95 and I was living with my grandmother, Sears and Roebuck sent her a new credit card that actually had her name on it, not Mrs. John Eugene, which was grandfather's first two names, you know. She pulled her credit card out, and that's literally what her credit card said: Mrs. John Eugene, and then their last name. And she was appalled that she was getting a credit card with her own name on it. She was excited and appalled, because it was the goodbye to the era of women being chattel and being property. Before the late 70s, it was very hard for women to have medical procedures done without the oldest male elder of the family, whether that was their partner, their eldest brother, their father, their great uncle, whoever was in charge and the head of the family had to give permission and consent. When women were fighting back against home abuse, spousal abuse, and they would want to take the children, they weren't their children like they are today. It's predominantly the mother's children. It was the husband's children. You can't take his children from him, because again, we were nothing but breeding vessels and chattel. I think that unfortunately, Black America is still riding around with the blinders of the white man's faith, leading them as their means for morality and the way to get through life and to live life by the true moral nature. But that was nothing but a figment of lies to keep them somewhat happy and subservient to the white man.
Yep.
Religion is a really tough one for me. I'm not a religious person. I grew up in a somewhat religious home, but I shook all of that because as I was growing up and I was watching, you know, in the church congregation, I knew that, you know, Mr. Jones down there and Sally Mae on the corner were, you know, hitting it off because I saw them at dinner one night being awful romantic. And then I knew that, you know, his wife is also, you know, in cahoots with the choir director. And so you start seeing all of this go on and you're like, but it's the very things they're preaching against. It's nothing but a house of sinners. And they're all coming together in one spot trying to pretend that they're somebody that they're not.
Exactly.
And that they're better than the others that they're preaching against, even though they're all doing the same thing. And I just really got away from it because it wasn't leading me in a direction and a moral compass that I felt was correct. I wanted to be an ethical human being, and lying to people and pretending to be something that I'm not is not me living my true core self. It's not me being allowed to be me. It's me being controlled by that church and that patriarchy that I don't want to be controlled by.
Yep.
And so through the internet, I found a community of individuals who have the same thought processes as I do. And I realized that I'm not here and I'm not alone and I'm not wrong. I just have a difference of opinion.
Exactly.
Sorry about my clock chiming in the background there.
It's okay. We have a conversation. Like I said, it's a conversation. That's what happens in the conversation. And I appreciate your outlook because it's refreshing to hear someone to just be them, you know. And I'm not ever going to advocate, you know. I may agree with you, and me and you may have, you know, similar views on certain things or whatever. But I'm not the one to advocate that anybody who has an opposite view is wrong. Everybody lives the way they want, you know, and that's how I think you have to be if you're saying that you want to be open and honest and ethical about how you want to be, if it's being poly or, you know, however, if you want to live outside that proverbial box of normalcy that is put upon you by, like you said, religious, you know, the religious faction of this country or society, by the patriarchal way of thinking in this country, the white male dominated viewpoint of this country. It's okay to be outside of that, but it's also okay if you say, hey, I'm monogamous, I want one person, I want to die with that person, that one person, I don't want anything else besides that person. I may not feel like, okay, that's not, you know, I don't know how healthy that is, but if that's what you want, that's what you're happy with, fine, go ahead. It's about, for me, just about being honest about who you are. And me, who I am, may be different from who someone else is. My problem is the hypocrisy, like you were giving the story about the, you know, the church people. It's the hypocrisy that leads thinkers, as you and I may be, take us away from that, you know, like that religious background, because everyone in my family, for the most part, are, you know, religious people. I mean, hey, that's what you are. I am staunchly, you know, against it. I'm unapologetically against any idea of religion, but that's just me. But I don't walk around, you know, telling everybody else they're stupid because they believe that's the way you believe. This is what works for me. You know, I have to breathe this air. I have to bleed this blood. Nobody else does it for me. My heart beats for me. That's who I'm going to be. That's that, you know, even with my kids, I can't tell them, you know, for long, you know, the way I raised them. I'm going to believe how you want to believe, be who you want to be, you know. And even with my thoughts on monogamy or relationships, I have two daughters. And people would ask me, well, what if your daughters came in with, you know, she got a boyfriend here and a boyfriend there and yada, yada, yada. How would that make you feel? That's their right. As long as, like we both have been saying, like most people say, who think the way, you know, who see things the way we see it, as long as you're open and honest and ethical about it, hey, I have no problem with you, what you do or how you do it. Just don't hurt yourself and don't be trying to hurt anyone else. Hey, this concludes another episode of The Real Offspring of Failure. This is your boy with The Truth Podcast. I appreciate you guys coming through. I really, really hope you enjoyed the show. I want to thank Miss Shelly James for coming through and dropping so much knowledge on us and blessing us with her unique perspective and her beautiful words. I really hope you guys enjoyed the show. If there's anything in the episode that you know, that you agreed with, you didn't agree with, you know, you got an idea, suggestion, you know, hit me up. Leave me a message. Maybe I'll get you into an episode, or maybe you can come on and we can have a conversation about how you feel about some things. Maybe what you heard in this episode or you know, past episodes. Again, this is your boy E. Thank you for joining me for The True Podcast, The Real Offspring of Failure Show. See you soon. Peace.